Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
I had told myself that 2016 was just crawling by. I'd be at dinner with friends and I'd say, this has been a slow year, have you noticed? God, just crawling by. This feels like it's going on forever and ever and ever. And as I'm preparing for the next 4 to 5 weeks of radio shows, I look up and the obvious finally hits me. It's September! We are this close to long sleeves and the leaves falling from the trees and pumpkin spice everything, which I'm actually happy about. I'm a pumpkin guy. Christmas commercials on television. That's going to start any second now. We're there. Personally, I'm kind of ready for fall for a few reasons. Obviously, as we head toward October, we're getting ready for the annual tradition of the Ghost Story Show, which is always a highlight of my year. I hope it is for you as well. As we sit around the virtual campfire and we share Halloween ghost stories together. In November, I'm celebrating podcast number 300. Can you believe we're going to have 300 shows in the can this year, this fall? And the Fellowship of Freethought Dallas has teamed up with me. They have been amazing because I thought, well, I want to mark the occasion somehow. I don't just want to do a retrospective where we play clips from the years past, blah, blah, blah. I want to do a live event somewhere. And I don't want to do it here in Oklahoma. So I've teamed up with Fellowship of Freethought Dallas to put together essentially what's going to be like a mini conference, a one-day, all-day event in Dallas, Texas. And it started like, well, I'd like to do a show in front of a crowd. It'll be fun. And then, you know, I'd like to have some friends come out. And, you know, if they're going to be there, they should do at least a short presentation. Why bring them there if we don't give a chance to go on stage and do what they're best at? That'd be amazing. What if we had some great music? That'd be a lot of fun. What if we did this? What if we did that? Before you know it, this little 2-hour podcast turned into a whole day. Big party, Dallas, Texas. And here's what we've come up with, okay? Matt Dillahunty will be there. He's going to do some magic. He's going to actually do a magic show. He'll join me for the podcast. David Smalley of Dogma Debate is going to be there. Sarah Hayder of Ex-Muslims of North America is flying in from D.C. to be a part of the event. Aaron Raw is coming out. He'll give a presentation and then join us later on for the show. And also joining me and doing a live concert for the whole crowd is Shelley Siegel. We're flying her in from the West Coast. So it's turned into this thing. It's going to be amazing as we celebrate show number 300. The date is Saturday, November 19th. $15 ticket covers everything. And trust me, that's just to help us cover our expenses. Space is limited. So get your tickets as soon as you can. Again, $15 a pop. You can go to fofdallas.org/300live. And the details and ticket info all right there. FOF, of course, stands for Fellowship of Freethought. fofdallas.org/300live. And I'll see you on November 19th. Going to be a great day. Coming up next Tuesday on the broadcast, we're going to talk to a guy named John Wathy. He's written a new book called The Illusion of God's Presence, The Biological Origins of Spiritual Longing. He's got a little bit of a different angle than we've heard before on the workings of the human brain and why it so often seems to predispose us to believe in the supernatural and to seek God or gods. And we're going to talk to John about the illusion of God's presence next Tuesday. Don't miss it. Today's show is about interfaith couples. Most of the conversations on the show today really have to do with people who are of a faith and no faith, which is kind of how it always seems to play out on this particular broadcast. What happens when someone who believes in God or has some sort of spirituality bonds their life with someone who has no belief in God, and how do they make that work? We're going to hear a lot from members of this audience about their own experiences, the ups and downs, the challenges and opportunities of being an interfaith couple. And on this broadcast, I'm going to speak with Dale McGowan. He's the author of Parenting Beyond Belief and Raising Free Thinkers, and he has a book called In Faith and in Doubt, How Religious Believers and Non-Believers Can Create Strong Marriages and Loving Families. And Dale's going to join us to talk about this whole interfaith thing and how it might be possible to make it work. We'll talk to him just a bit. Real fast, if I may, I'd like to say a huge thank you out to our show sponsor today. You know, it's interesting. Sometimes when I'm at an event or a convention or a tour stop and I sign one of my books, I say this. I'll say, especially if it's a kid, I'll say, make every day a discovery. You know, let's go out and learn something new. Be a sponge. Enrich our minds. Let's discover something today that we didn't know yesterday. This is why I have become a huge fan of The Great Courses Plus. The Great Courses Plus is a video learning service of over 7,000 different lectures and classes, and these are taught by many of the world's greatest professors on a host of different subjects. Everything from astronomy to history to world religions to cooking to photography, foreign language, tons of stuff. I just finished a series with Neil deGrasse Tyson, astrophysicist and the host of Cosmos. The series was called The Inexplicable Universe, Unsolved Mysteries. And Dr. Tyson gets into the origins of life and the theory of relativity and dark matter, black holes, quantum mechanics, that kind of stuff. But he teaches in a way that you and I can understand and participate, in a way where we're not just hearing the words or just memorizing, but we're genuinely learning. And I am really enjoying The Great Courses. I think you will enjoy it too. For my listeners, The Great Courses is offering a free month of unlimited access to all of The Great Courses Plus lectures, 30 days of use totally free when you sign up at this domain. Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth Andrews. Start your free month. Enjoy this wonderful tool for discovery. Go to thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth Andrews. Okay, let's start by going to the switchboard. I've got Josh on Skype. You're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. How's it going?
Good, Seth. How are you?
I'm well. We're talking about interfaith relationships. What do you have for the broadcast today?
Well, so my story is kind of similar to yours. I grew up a very devout Christian and then later left. But my wife, on the other hand, she grew up a Seventh-day Adventist, and she left that really quickly. Then she had sort of explored paganism for a while, but now she attends an Episcopalian church. And
wait, she went from paganism to the Episcopalians?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. All right.
I don't know.
No, that's all right. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Keep going.
But the story I thought you might be interested in was when we decided to get married, you know, she really wanted to get married in her Episcopalian church. It was vitally important to her, like deal breaker important to her. My issue was I didn't want to get up in front of a church and say, hey, I'm promising to commit my life to you, but I'm also lying about this faith that I have. So the compromise we eventually came to is, okay, let's talk to the priest and see if he can let me write my own vows. Long story short, it took a couple months, but we finally sat down with the priest, and he wouldn't let me write my own vows. But what we did end up compromising on was we went through their standard vows line by line, and he actually let me remove any mention of God from them.
Well, I'm still stuck on the he wouldn't let you write your own vows. Isn't this your ceremony? It's your party, right?
Yeah, but the Episcopalian Church has rules, and it's part of their liturgy is really important to them. So they.
Oh, hell no. The minute you say you aren't allowed to do your wedding this way, I say I'm going to do it my way elsewhere. And then I hit the door. Does your wife have a stronger tie to that church than you have to another institution? Is that the story?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't care where. And it didn't mean that much to me where it was. So we worked it out so that our vows were almost the same, except there was this you know, I didn't mention anything about God. Is anybody in the audience who didn't know I was an atheist, including my family, who weren't sure? That was sort of a – I think that was sort of a coming out, because it was very clear. His vows are different than hers in this one very dramatic way.
So she's pledging herself to you before God and to God. She used the words?
Yes, she did.
Okay. She and did. You omitted God from your vows.
I did. I did.
And afterward, then what happened?
Nothing dramatic. We can't talk about religion. Like, she won't let me bring it up. It just it leads to fights and leads to arguments. But that was a year and a half ago. We're still married. Things are still going good. She still attends that church. I haven't been back since.
Well, I mean, you understand how much of this sounds. The priest wouldn't let me write my own vows. She won't let me bring it up.
I pick my battles.
It just doesn't matter that much to you.
It just doesn't matter that much to me. And, you know, when things do, you know, when something is that important to me, I'll stick up for it. But those things, those particular things are just, I can deal.
It's just not worth it.
Not worth it.
Now, is it a cost-benefit discussion? Like, it's not worth it because everything else is so good and I want to just focus on the positive? Or is it, she will make my life hell if we get into this discussion? Because that's a whole other conversation.
No, my wife's not like that. That's not her at all.
So you guys are doing okay after a year and a half, did you say?
Yeah, roughly April of 2015.
Are you out with your other members of your family? Do you speak about religion in a sort of a skeptical way? Or is it just off the table, period?
We have discussed it occasionally.
Mom and dad, siblings, other relatives. No, yes.
I got a call from my mom once. I think if I remember correctly, it was just not long before the wedding, where she was worried about my soul, and you know, we had to talk about. I had to explain to her that I just, you know, that I don't have a fear of hell because I don't believe it exists.
Hey, Mom, I don't have a soul. I mean, that's that's not going to be something she really receives very well, probably.
No, she didn't really hear. She didn't really hear it very well. She ended the call with, "Well, I'll just pray for you."
Hey, you know what? If it makes her happy, if it keeps her cozy and comfortable, and helps to alleviate her fears about her son, you know, pray all you want.
Yep.
Right?
Yep. I don't, you know, anybody who wants to pray for me, they're more than welcome.
I think Dillahunty took a similar tack with his mom. You know, his mom is a devout believer, and so I think she's just, I'm going to pray for you. And he's like, hey, knock yourself out, man.
Yep, know? Go ahead.
Go ahead. If it makes you feel better, whatever, you know, call down the enchantment from on high in my favor, and if anything happens, I'll be the first to let you know.
Sounds good. Yeah, that's about right. All right.
I hope you both are doing well and have a lot of goodness and happiness between you.
Yep. Yep. Things are going well.
All right. Well, thanks for sharing your perspective, and all my best for the future for both of you, okay?
Thank you, Seth. Have a good day.
Now, the Bible takes kind of a hard line, of course, with the union of a believer and a non-believer. 2 Corinthians 6:14 says, "Do not be unequally yoked with unbelievers, for what partnership has righteousness with lawlessness?" Now, you catch that? If we're atheists, we are lawless people. Or what fellowship has light with darkness? Aha, we're also agents of darkness. For the already unequal union, 1 Corinthians 7, starting with verse 12, says, "To the rest I say, I, not the Lord, that if any brother has a wife who's an unbeliever, and she consents to live with him, he should not divorce her. If any woman has a husband who's an unbeliever, and he consents to live with her, she should not divorce him. For the unbelieving husband is made holy because of his wife, and the unbelieving wife is made holy because of her husband. Otherwise, your children would be unclean, but as it is, they are holy." This is a tough one to figure out. If an atheist and a believer, or a non-Christian and a Christian, live in the same marriage, how does one make the other holy, and what does that holiness bring? It's not a ticket to heaven because you haven't said the salvation prayer, but if you are not a believer in God, you are not aligned with Jesus Yahweh, you're not a Christian, how can you be holy? It's a weird, contradictory scripture. On Facebook, I asked the question about interfaith relationships and got some great responses. Chip said, "Yes, I think I'm a god. My wife disagrees." John said, "I've dated someone who had religious beliefs. Everything was amazing between us I really could have gotten past her personal beliefs until one day she told me that she just couldn't get past mine. Jody said, "My husband watches Ancient Aliens. Does that count?" Brent said, "Yeah, don't do it. They will inevitably turn on you." Do you really want to be married to someone who believes you are destined to their imaginary hell? Vera said, "My partner's Catholic and I'm atheist. Not easy. It's such a big difference in our beliefs about the universe and the life on it. Lots of talking and having conversations, respecting the other person's beliefs and thoughts, and not going into conversation when the goal is trying to change the other person's mind. I guess for us, our love towards one another means more than what we believe in." Well, I don't think you have to respect their beliefs, Vera. I think you can respect the person, but you don't have to respect what they believe necessarily. But I understand what you're trying to say. Larry said, "I was married to a moderate Hindu for 25 years. When we first married, it was not an issue, but she became more religious over the years and tried to convert me. My response was to remind her that she knew I did not believe when we married, and I would not be the same person if I changed. Unfortunately, she is no longer the same person, and now we are divorced. I am now with a Buddhist. What can I say? I love her dearly and just hope this same does not happen again." By the way, Larry, we're going to do a broadcast on Buddhism in a few weeks. That should be an interesting show. Thanks so much for submitting that. Area code 906, you are on the Thinking Atheist radio podcast. What's your name?
My name is Jill.
Hi, Jill. We're talking about interfaith relationships, what some would consider an odd match, especially when it comes to belief or non-belief. What's your story?
Well, I have been dating a Christian woman for almost 2 years. She attends church somewhat regularly, and I have been a lifelong atheist. Some of it works, some of it doesn't. We discuss religion pretty regularly. We talk about how she feels and what she believes, and then what I believe. I think that when I talk about what I believe, it ends up being a little bit more offensive. I have made her cry before. So she takes it very seriously, and I obviously don't.
Is she devout? Is she a Bible believer? Is she a Bible literalist? Is she kind of a cultural, casual Christian? I mean, you tell me as much or as little as you want about her. I know this is a relationship, but...
Well, actually, I did ask her if this was okay if I did this before I even...
Okay, well, good for you guys. I'm glad you did.
So she goes to a church in Minnesota. Well, actually, she doesn't go there anymore because she lives with me. But this church, the gentlemen there have a lot of information about LGBT issues and how it relates to the Bible. So I guess their beliefs as far as Christians are concerned are much more liberal.
Well, they would have to be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's kind of where I'm going, Jill. It's always interesting to me to see people who are adherents to or believers in Christ and Christianity and sort of the tenets of the Christian faith, but who are homosexual. And I think the scriptures are pretty hardcore in relation to non-heterosexuals, you know, one man, one woman, that kind of stuff.
Right. And they have taken things from the scripture to mean something else. And they take it and focus on some of the things that they would say are, you know, moral and uplifting stories instead of all that bad stuff that we think about when we talk about, say, homosexuality in the Bible and, you know,
cherry picking.
Yeah,
I mean, if I was to say
bit.
That right, I mean, I'm not trying to get you in trouble, but right,
right,
we skip
yeah,
over
but,
the hate and death and Sodom and Gomorrah, and it's an abomination. And you say God is love, Jesus is love, let us love one another, right?
Yeah, so that's kind of where that church specifically is, I guess, on these issues.
How do you two make it work?
Well, we do things like we watch God's Not Dead together, and I obviously have some very strong reactions to some things in that movie, and she reacted to it much differently than I did, and we discussed how we both felt about it and why. And you know, there's just, we just don't argue about it. I understand that she believes something that's different than what I believe. The part where I think that it's going to be more complicated is when it comes to raising a family, and we're talking about how you raise a child and if that child is going to be baptized, going to church or you know, Sunday school or what have you. I would prefer we did none of those things, but I understand that she's going to want at least some of those things. So I feel that as long as we can find some common ground or like a middle ground and then compromise a little bit, at least so there's no real, I guess, boundaries crossed so that one person isn't indoctrinating the child more than the other, I guess, if that makes sense.
Do you foresee this becoming more difficult as you two move forward? Or
I think that it'll probably come up more because we'll have to talk about those things. And we talk about them now, how we'll handle them. And I think that there's enough mutual respect there that we'll be able to come up with something that seems fair to both of us. As it is right now, I mean, I participate in some of her faith things. My family is Methodist. And I've always gone to the Christmas service. Of course, I don't really participate, but I'm there and I'm respectful and it makes them happy. And I've met her family for the first time at Easter church. I'm there just kind of listening. And, you know, although it's, I think it's good for me as well to hear what something I hear something that I don't believe in to, I guess, understand what I do believe in more thoroughly.
Are you conducting a social experiment in some way, you think? Or am I reading too much into it? I don't know.
No, I'm absolutely analyzing my surroundings and trying to understand why people believe in this or what they're getting out of it, because I'm not getting it, I guess.
Yeah.
But I try.
So the benefit of being with someone who doesn't have this in common with you, I mean, the pros outweigh the cons for you.
Yeah, I guess because it's not, my non-faith is not the most important thing in my life. And I don't know that her faith is the most important thing in her life. I don't believe that it is. So together, it's not a huge, I guess it's not an obstacle. And it's not that it's something that really helps. I think that it would probably be easier if we did believe the same things, but in our case, I guess, because there is so much, you know, respect for each other's intelligence, it just isn't an issue.
I'm so glad you two didn't find each other in the time of Leviticus. You know what I'm saying? I mean, I just keep coming back to it. I think it's like when I see women defending the Bible. This is a book that, if you read it, kind of mutes your voice and diminishes your importance and your role and makes a servant out of you and a subservient out of you. And, you know, woman, be silent. Go home, tell your husband, let him come and argue for it. That kind of thing is all over the Bible. And when I see women who then come forward and embrace and champion the Bible, it's hard for me to accept that. And then when I see people who are non-heterosexual, who are adherents to a Christian faith, I think, I mean, if you'll pardon the expression, Jesus, have you read the Bible and its take on homosexuality? It just isn't pleasant, you know?
Well, I've kind of joked before about the women part in the Bible, that the Bible made me gay because I could never not be a feminist. And reading things in the Bible, I'm like, oh, like, why would you? Yeah, I'm going to go home and just serve my man.
Submit, be silent, right? Take your shoes off and have dinner ready at 5. That kind of thing is really, and that kind of thinking sadly exists in many of the more fundamentalist churches out there. And I think it's easy to see why some other churches are stretching away from the fundamentals of their faith. I'm reminded of the saying that says, if you have to distance yourself from fundamentalism, there may be a problem with your faith's fundamentals, and I think there's a lot of truth in that. So, are you happy? Are you doing well, Jill?
Very happy, and we are doing great. Hopefully, in a couple months, we'll be doing some ring shopping. So
really getting serious? Well. Gonna go pick out a ring together.
Right.
Can you and be married in that church? Or are you gonna find another?
Yeah, actually she has asked if they would do the ceremony and they said yes. I don't know how I feel about that yet. Again, that's another area that we're going to have to find some sort of compromise on what type of ceremony there really is.
So then it becomes a question of, does the pastor incorporate some sort of a God or spiritual message into the ceremony itself? And are you comfortable with that? You really want it to be about the two of you and not some other agenda? Those are discussions you guys are probably going to end up having, sounds like, pretty soon.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. I can see. Look, I can see if Aaron Raw can come over and officiate. I'm sure nobody will mind. He'll walk in, you know, all 6 feet, whatever, with the long hair and the Fu Manchu and the black suit and the leather and whatnot. And we'll get him to conduct the ceremony. I'm sure that'll leave a wedding memory that few will forget. Jill, thanks for sharing your story. Thanks for being a part of the broadcast today. And you're an example of two people with these kind of extreme differences who are managing to make it work. And I wish you both many years together and much happiness, okay?
Well, thank you very much, and thanks for having me.
Michael says, about 4 years ago, I decided I was an atheist. Actually, probably a more accurate way to say that, Michael, is you realized you were an atheist. My wife is a New Ager who is quite into woo. She follows a channeler like a guru and is into all kinds of, I think, nonsense for, quote, spiritual reasons. Her dedication to this is enormous, as strong as anyone who is a religious fundamentalist. It blows me away, the things she believes, and puts enormous amounts of time into. We've been married for over 30 years. She's a very loving and kind person who loves me, even though I'm not into her woo stuff. We do have other common interests. I just have a hard time trying to understand how an otherwise grounded, intelligent person can not only believe in lots of very nonsensical things, but also devote such huge amounts of time and energy toward them. I wish that didn't bother me as much as it does. My main strategy is to focus on her good qualities, find common activities that we can have fun doing together, and then keep my mouth shut about the huge hunk of her life spent on the New Agey stuff. I hope part of your show will be about this kind of situation, as opposed to the more common situation of an atheist married to a traditional churchgoer. Well, I think in many ways it's kind of the same thing. Now, you're talking about someone who is believing in spirits, in spirituality, whether we're talking about God or some sort of a nameless spirit or spirit realm out there. We're still talking about a belief in a reality beyond the physical, beyond the natural. I mean, those who believe in healing crystals, you know, placing crystals upon the body, aren't all that much different than those who believe in anointing oil. Those who believe in spiritual energy that courses through the body aren't all that different than those who believe in a soul. Those who believe in a posthumous existence where we are reincarnated into another form or head off to nirvana or some spirit realm really aren't all that different than those who believe in a heaven and a hell. I mean, there's many differences, but certainly we're talking about the same type of thing. And intelligent people who believe unintelligent or irrational things. Shermer's done some great work on this. We did a whole show at the beginning of this year called Why Smart People Believe Stupid Things. And I would encourage you to go back and find that broadcast in archive. The short answer is that sometimes the smart people are better at outsmarting themselves. They're better at rationalizing the irrational. They're better at connecting the dots in a weird way that, to them, makes a picture that looks like something. Sometimes it takes a really clever person to be able to do that. And I find this very interesting. It's also, I think, going to be an interesting show for you next week when I speak to Jack Wathy about the illusion of God's presence and the biological reasons, the biological origins of what he calls spiritual longing. So hang on for next Tuesday's show with Jack Wathy. I think that's going to be of great interest to you, my friend. Area code 386, you're on the Thinking Atheist Radio podcast. What's your name?
Hi, this is Evan.
Evan, the topic today is interfaith or mixed relationships. What do you think?
I've been in an interfaith, I guess you could say that, relationship since I came out as an atheist about 2.5 years ago to my wife, who is a Christian.
How long have you been married?
Well, yesterday we just celebrated our 8th anniversary.
Okay, so you guys were both believers, you meet, and then the sea change happens in your life, not necessarily in hers, at least when it comes to the subject of God.
Yeah, she's definitely very much still a believer, and we actually we got baptized together, I guess it was 2008. So me coming out as an atheist was a bit of a shock to her, I guess you could say.
Does she resent this change in you?
She did when it first happened. I guess you could, you know, she likened it to actually, you know, like cheating and almost on a worse level, I guess. She said that basically me doing this was kind of worse than if I had cheated on her with somebody else.
Okay, so how do we get past that, or has she?
It's taken some time. You know, it's still kind of weird for her because she doesn't seem to comprehend how somebody could not believe in a God. But what's interesting is we started going to a new church. I still go to church with her.
Man, I see a pattern. Almost every freaking call and email I've got has the atheist being carted to church with the religious person, but it's not happening in reverse. I'm sorry. I just wanted to make the observation. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Evan. Keep talking.
I
go
mean,
ahead.
You know, you give and take, I guess. And, you know, for me, this, this kind of keeps a bit of a, you know, keeps things a bit nicer. But
you give, she takes.
There, yeah.
Is that what you're saying? I mean, would she go to an atheist event with you, Evan?
Definitely not.
Okay. All right. It's what I mean. I mean, you give, she takes, right? You're the one going to church. If you didn't go to church, would that be a problem for her?
I think it wouldn't be as much of a problem now as it would have been in the past. I mean, this new church, she's kind of found a bit of a family there, which has taken a while. But I think it would be still really hard for her if I were to say, I don't want to go at all anymore.
I'm not saying in any way she's a bad person. I'm just saying that I see the pattern over and over, and I kind of feel for you.
I understand, man. Believe me.
Says to you, this is almost like, this is worse than you cheating on me, than you being unfaithful, right? It's mm-hmm. like you've been unfaithful to God.
Well, I think it's more of that I went through about a little over a year before I told her. And the issue was that I didn't go through this journey with her, I guess. Which I can see her point. You know, I didn't say anything before. I said, hey, guess what? I don't believe at all.
It was an ambush, right? It's a total shock to the system. Do you think she would have responded better had you been honest in the beginning and said, look, I'm having some struggles. I'm having some questions. Some of this doesn't add up. Do you think she would have maybe acclimated? Would she have responded more positively to that?
Yeah. I mean, and she said that, you know, I think it really would, you know, it probably would have been better because, you know, I would have been able to say, you know, I'm having doubts. You know, I could have gone, you know, talk to pastor and all that stuff. And if I had still come out as an atheist, I think it would have been easier for her.
Well, a year's a long time to sit on that, man. I mean, she's kind of got a point, right? You know, you guys share life together. It should be something that hopefully you have the temperature of relationship where you can go to her and say, look, you know, can we talk? I'm having some problems, some issues.
I
buy that. I buy her frustration with that.
And then from my perspective, though, you know, it's a freaky thing to kind of deal with and not knowing who to talk to or, you know, if you should say something in the first place, you know.
Do you fight about the issue of God?
Yeah, there's been some heated battles. I try not to really broach the subject too much, right now. But there's definitely been some times where, you know, it's been pretty trying on our relationship.
It's easier to talk about other things.
Yeah, and I mean, it's usually her stopping the conversation if it does come up because she has a problem basically staying cool in about the subject when we talk about it. But a lot of times it's like, you know, I'll be trying like a Socratic method or something and she'll get very frustrated and just stop the conversation.
You never fly off the handle?
Oh, yeah.
You never just explode and say, I mean, I picture both of you, you're sitting, let's say, on the couch in front of the television, and a news channel does a story about a plane crash where 150 die and one person miraculously survives. And you're like, this is the stupidest. I mean, I picture you doing something like that.
Yeah.
And then she's like, why do you have to be that way? Does that happen?
Yeah. I mean, you know, when I first did come out, I was definitely more vocal, like, especially around her and stuff. But I think it's kind of cooled off. And so I, you know, I try to, you know, if she brings it up, then I'll kind of go along with it. And I try to be a little, you know, careful as to what I say. But I don't tend to bring it up, you know, unless like it's kind of open there.
So you have other things in your life that you can enjoy together, things that
yeah,
you have
absolutely.
In common, right? So you can't, yeah. It's like the married couple that's, you know, you got a Democrat and a Republican, you know, they are of polar opposite viewpoints when it comes to politics. They have this big mm-hmm. disagreement, but the rest of their lives are really good. And so they live around that. Is that
exactly.
accurate for you on the subject of God?
I think that's pretty accurate. And I said, I think, you know, I do kind of, you know, make some concessions in terms of like going to church and stuff to be able to keep that from affecting the rest of our lives and stuff too. So.
If I do a tour stop anywhere near your city, don't get yourself in trouble, but bring her. Say, look, I got a friend. His name is Seth. He's doing this thing. It's going to be a lot of fun. Yeah, there'll be a bunch of atheists there, but just you're going to have a great time. Talk her in. Try to talk her into it and bring her out.
We've never really been around a whole group of non-believers, though. We have met a few more out here since we moved to Austin than we did back in Florida.
All right, my friend. Well, thanks for sharing a perspective. I wish you two all happiness together. And, you know, like I say, if I get near your zip code, see if you can bring her out and we'll shake her hand and we'll assure her that, you know, it's going to be all right. Okay?
Definitely. Thanks a lot, man.
More of your comments, more of your emails on the way in just a few. Also, I'm going to speak to a couple that one is atheist, the other is Jewish. They are making it work, and they're going to appear on the radio to talk about the dynamic of that relationship. And also later in the broadcast, I'm going to talk to Dale McGowan, the author of many books, including In Faith and in Doubt, How Religious Believers and Non-Believers Can Create Strong Marriages and Loving Families. How do you make it work? We're going to talk with Dale McGowan about that. All that and more on the way next. Hang on. Broadcast today is about interfaith relationships. Robert is a listener who has managed to make it work. He sends an email that says, I'm a 60-year-old atheist married to a younger Catholic. I'm a tolerant atheist, as I even go to church with her, even though to me it's a ridiculous belief. The way I always looked at it, if I cannot give her 1 hour a week to sit beside her in church, then I must not love her very much. We've been married for over 10 years now, and things are good. I even have a tattoo of Jesus smoking a joint. I'm looking forward to this show very much. Good topic. Thanks, Robert. Thanks for the message, man. Albany said, my husband and I met 6 years ago, and we'd always been total opposites. While at that time I believed he was a deeply devout traditional Roman Catholic, and I was very irreligious, with a sickened view of religion in most religious people. We still started dating, though, and it was absolutely hell. He was supposed to be with a good Catholic girl or become a priest, and his mother saw neither of that with me in the picture. 4 years into being together, we were married with 3 kids, the third being on the way. I became an atheist quietly within the course of a week and was terrified to tell my husband. As we were heading to his parents' house, I just blurted it out in the car. It was shocking to him, but we talked a lot. We talked every day, and sometimes it was angry. I was going through my stages of angry atheism, while he was going through his own angry atheism for his wife becoming one. Even through that, however, I supported him, and he supported me. I attended Mass with him and our children, and he never asked me to hide my lack of beliefs. After a torturous year of other events and coming back together to really grow, we came to a place of genuine discussion. This eventually led him to leave the Catholic Church and denounce Christianity. He's in a place of agnostic classic deism now, and we've only ever had excellent and open discussions. It just took time, and realizing that different perspectives, even heavy-set ones, like belief in a God, are not what make a marriage strong. Albany, thank you so much for the message. Greatly appreciated. I actually had several messages in from people who these discussions between them and their spouse resulted in their spouse coming to a point of critical mass and, if nothing else, stepping out of fundamentalism. I saw quite a few of those messages that came in. Here's kind of a disturbing letter I want to share with you. It's from Jonathan. It says, I sit here writing this letter the day after my wife threatened to divorce me and take my children to another state. I'm an atheist and she's a Christian, and I've banned all religious talk between us. I don't want to meet her religious friends. I don't want her to lose them because I'm an atheist. I don't want to hear the words of religion at all. I actually stopped listening to your podcast for a few months because I cannot stand to hear those words anymore. I did come back. I don't know how I got to this place I'm in. As my children got older, I became more vocal and militant in my atheist ways. My father-in-law told me to stop all that Satanist stuff. I was posting quotes from the Bible to my Facebook. My wife became more religious and found religious friends. She's now made it clear that staying here with her religious friends is more important than moving to another state with her husband, assuming I accept a job. A few weeks ago, I had to tell my wife that my 6-year-old child is deathly afraid of hell and of me going to hell. She thought and she thinks it's important for them, a 4- and 6-year-old, to know about hell, but she was not sure about them being afraid of it. I had to explain that this is a terrifying fear that daddy's going to hell, on a level with monsters under the bed. I also had to explain that someone at her church did this to our children. Seth, they made my children believe that hell is real and that I am going there, and it terrifies my baby girl. I love my children more than I ever knew I could love someone, and at the same time, I believe I may have made the biggest mistake of my life. All of this is a journey over the last year, and clearly there's more to the story, but I just can't deal with this. I wish I'd never stayed with someone with a belief system so fundamentally different than my own. She's walking around today as if last night never happened, and I hate her for it. I hate her for what she said to me, and I hate her for what her religion is doing to her, but most of all, I hate her for what she's turning my children into. I think I'm still in love with her, and I hate myself for wishing this would just blow over and go back to normal. Thank you for your show, Jonathan. Well, Jonathan, you know, I'm actually really grieved by the letter. There are a lot of things in it that I have questions about. You know, you've banned all religious talk between us. Well, I understand if you've had real contention and it always explodes, you wanting to avoid the subject. I totally get that. But to have banned religious talk, it just sounds extreme. You know, if we can't have some kind of discourse or dialogue, if we can't speak about these things when they come up, you don't want to meet her religious friends. Why not? Why would she lose friends because you're not religious? Would a true friend abandon your wife because of the person that she married, and that person may hold a different position on anything, be it God or whatever? I don't think so, right? That's a hugely conditional friendship. It's actually more of a pursuit of like-minded people instead of friendship for its own sake. That's a huge red flag. I understand being angry. I understand lashing out. We've all been at the point when we just come to critical mass and we say, I've had enough. This is ridiculous. It's damaging. They're coming after my kids. I'm pissed off. I have a right to be. I understand that. You have a right to be angry about what religion is doing to people. I'm really grieved by the use of the word hate, especially in relation to your life partner. And I know I'm projecting, I may be reading something into it, but I'm guessing that you don't hate your spouse. I'm guessing that you are looking for language to help communicate just how frustrated you are. There's resentment and there's pain and there's anger, but I kind of doubt that there's hate. I really, at first blush, looking from the outside in, granted, looking from the outside in, I just think you're frustrated. You're wound up. You're trying to express it in the strongest language possible. But it is my hope that you do not hate your life partner. And you shouldn't hate yourself for being in love with her. There are people out there with greater qualifications than what I have to advise you in this matter, but if we were having a beer talking like friends, I would probably recommend that you just make a list. What are the things that drive you crazy, and what are the things that make you unhappy? And then over here, make a list. What are the things about her that you love? What are the things about her that have merit and bring joy and positive things? What are the things about her that you're proud of and that you have tremendous admiration for? I know they have to be there. At least some things, right? Or you wouldn't have married her in the first place unless she's just done a complete 180. Make a kind of list, even if it's a mental list. This at least allows you to know where you are, right? If you know where you are, you know your place of origin. It makes it a little easier to perhaps decide the next step, to choose a direction and or destination. But I do appreciate you sharing such a personal part of your life, and it does communicate some of the challenges that we see in interfaith relationships, especially when kids are involved. I have on Skype a couple that would be, I guess interfaith is the word we keep using, but most of the couples this show, one has no faith and the other holds to some sort of a religious belief. I've got Robert and Amanda on Skype. Thanks for joining me. How you guys doing?
Great. Yeah. Thanks for having us.
Okay, flesh it out for me. Who believes or doesn't believe in what?
I am Jewish, and the running joke for me is that I'm Jew-ish. I don't attend synagogue anymore. I used to when I was younger. I observe the holidays, but I don't necessarily like take off work and all that good stuff.
Jewish culture has always been part of your sort of biography?
Yeah, Jewish on both sides, both parents. So we actually were raised celebrating Christmas and Hanukkah, just because Christmas was more like of a cultural thing.
Robert, were you a heathen when you met or what?
Actually, when we met in high school, I was a Methodist. My parents raised me Methodist, went to church every weekend, rain or shine, two services in Sunday school. Before we started dating, I was kind of in the agnostic phase, and that led into me becoming an atheist right around the time that we started dating seriously.
Yeah.
Now, was this on Amanda's radar at the time or what?
Not really, because we initially reconnected through MySpace, and one of his people I'd like to meet on MySpace was Jesus. So I was under the impression that he was quite religious.
MySpace, by the way, you just dated yourself, but what year was this right? Approximately?
This was, we first started talking again probably into end of 2005.
When did the discussions between you start to happen?
I can't remember the exact point, but I do remember him saying he was agnostic. It might have actually been when I told him that my best friend is agnostic/atheist, and I think he brought it up at that point.
So you're not weird about it anyway. Your best friend is a non-believer.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm very open. In my belief, if you're a good person, God is not going to send you to an everlasting hell. Plus, Jews don't believe in hell, so there's that.
Does Jewish faith and Jewish faith tradition kind of raise an eyebrow at the unbeliever? Or I know you said you're far from an Orthodox Jew.
No, I'm very much Reform. Growing up, my parents were very much, they didn't stick to the Torah very severely. It was more, let's take the morals from this and live a good life and live the Jewish life, which is, you know, do good while you're there, and in the afterlife, you'll be rewarded or punished accordingly.
How are you punished if you don't believe in hell?
There is a belief, I don't think it says specifically, but there is a belief that after you die, you burn in a fire, and that like cleanses your soul of all of the horrible things that you've done, and you become pure so that you can live a good life after that. But first you have to basically suffer through the fire.
You think that's going to happen to Robert someday?
I don't know what's going to happen. I believe that if you're a good person, you're not going to suffer a horrible afterlife.
Well, I mean, he's going to be burned at some point, right? The fires of purification. That's kind of where I was going. I mean, I think the larger question may be, how much do you believe and how much have you sort of grabbed because it helps to frame treating other people well and living a good life?
Right. Well, living a good life in general is very much a Jewish thing. We concentrate more on while you're here than what's in the afterlife. And if I am correct, I don't believe there's any actual specific afterlife that we believe in. It's more like the whole, you're going to be punished if you were bad, you'll be rewarded if you're good. But I've actually researched a bit, and it said that there wasn't a specific belief for Jews in the afterlife, but there's a lot of speculation about what happens.
Robert, she sounds kind of like a humanist. Live a good life, help other people, be a good person. I mean, that sounds familiar to us.
It certainly does. And that's one of the reasons why I was, you know, attracted to a relationship with her. She's a great person at heart, and whether or not she's Jewish or Muslim, Christian, atheist, she's an amazing person, and that's what attracted me to her.
What if she was more devout? Hey, come on, we're going to synagogue. Hey, I want to learn the Torah. I want to practice a more orthodox brand of my faith. What's your response to that if it was to happen, Robert?
She actually brought that up a couple of years ago, because I think some of the people she works with are Jewish, and they invited her to come to synagogue. And I wasn't opposed to it. I don't mind going and being there for her if that's something that she wanted to do. I'll be present and support her, but it doesn't necessarily mean that I have to believe in the message or anything like that.
Say, I actually have an aunt and an uncle. It's my biological uncle, so he's Jewish, and his wife is Christian, and he would go to church with her, and it's the same thing. Like, he didn't necessarily believe those things, but they were really welcoming, and he was, like, the token Jewish guy who always came, and it was very supportive. And
so he may have seen it as a shared experience and time spent with his spouse.
Yeah, and, like, with his kids as well, so yeah.
I'm curious about the moderate Jew, the progressive Jew, the secular Jew versus the Orthodox Jew.
Mm-hmm.
What causes you to practice in a different way than the Orthodox?
Well, not only was I raised that way, but even like interacting with Orthodox Jews and such, I fail to see the, I guess, redemption of following something so closely that's so outdated, because Christianity does that all the time. They just don't really have names for the different degrees to which they practice. So I see it as kind of your own interpretation of the Torah, just like how a lot of Christians will say, you know, interpret the Bible the way that your heart tells you. And that's how I see the different forms of Judaism.
Do you see it in any way as the belief tradition changing with the times? You know, the Judaism of today is different than the Judaism of yesterday. And the Judaism in one region is different than the Judaism in another region.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see this as sort of us feeding into it, perhaps what we want or what we need?
I think to the individuals, yes, I see merit in that. Some people are more comfortable in strictly adhering to the Torah, I think, because they take it maybe more literally. And again, I see this parallel in Christianity as well. They just have a more strict interpretation of God's desire for your life.
You don't see this as us making God in our image, deciding, well, I'm going to practice it this way because this way speaks to me.
I was actually talking to Robert about this last night. I was telling Robert, like, something that my mom and I have talked about is the fact that the word of God was transcribed by man, and there's fault in man. Like, man is not perfect. So, I mean, in my family, personally, we've talked about the fact that, you know, maybe man didn't interpret all of the things that God wanted as he intended. So that would explain some of the contradiction that exists and some of the harsh things that happen. Just like there's the, what is it, King James Bible. He had it changed. She had it approved, basically. Like, who's to say that didn't happen with another document just to, you know, keep order in society? And tinged or tainted the word of God, essentially.
So if God is all powerful and he knows everything, though, I wonder why he would entrust the communicating of his perfect word to creatures that he knew would probably screw things up. If he had such a critical message, you know, look, your house is on fire kind of a message. Mm-hmm. This is something I really want you to know. I wonder why God wouldn't himself found a way to sort of give us the message instead of having human beings subjectively vote on it and retranslate it and retranscribe it down through the centuries. It's kind of an odd choice, I think, for God if he wanted to be clear.
That's a good question.
It's a question I'd sure like to see ask a whole lot more. Talk to me about your, are you two married? Are you dating?
We're married.
Okay. Talk to me about Robert. Do any of your friends or family who are religious look at Robert and think, wow, what's the story on this guy? Or do they know that he's a non-believer?
They know. Yeah, he's definitely not quiet about it.
I mean, did they ever raise an eyebrow? Come on, what are you doing? I mean, you're a good Jewish girl. I mean, he's an atheist. Hello?
No, honestly, the only person who's ever done that is my Jewish boss. Like, he's like, really? Like, you're with an atheist? That's interesting. But my family is very much of the same mind as me. If you're a good person, if you have good morals, you'll probably end up in heaven. And that's, like, that's prevailing among my extended family, my immediate family. We're just extremely open-minded Jews. Extremely. Like, I've always told Robert, I will admit to the fact that I am a human and I could be wrong. I believe what I believe, and that's not changing. However, I'm not so arrogant as to say I am right and every religion is wrong. Just because there are so many religions that are so similar and have one God and just believe in something. And I just think it's very arrogant to say my belief is correct and your belief is wrong, because we're humans and we're fallible and that's just the nature of existence.
I like you and your family already. I mean, they've seen Robert for who he is, right? How about you, Robert? You know, your atheist friends, if you have any, think this looks odd on paper. Do they ever question you about it?
No, actually, most of the friends that I have that are atheists, I met through Amanda.
Sorry.
She tends to attract atheists who are actually good people, I guess. But my parents, who are deeply religious Christians, they have never said anything about marrying a Jewish girl. They've never asked anything negative about her. They love her. They adore her. They adopted her as their own daughter, as they should, as my wife. And yeah, my brother, who is an atheist, has never asked anything about her other than, you know, is she good to you? And she absolutely is, and she's perfect for me.
So, wait, you have Christian parents and there are two siblings who are atheists?
Yes.
Are they looking at each other going, hey, whoa, wait a minute, there's a disconnect here somewhere, or?
Isn't Matt a closet atheist, though?
He's not as vocal as I was in my, I guess you could call it a rebirth. When I realized I was an atheist, I was a militant atheist. Every Christian, everybody who believed was stupid. Whereas my younger brother is very quiet about it. He doesn't believe what he doesn't believe, but that's his issue. He's not spouting off about it on Facebook like I was.
Well, Robert, I know we're only using first names here, but we're not outing him in any way by speaking on the radio, are we?
No.
I don't want to get the guy put. I don't want to get the guy in hot water when he's not ready necessarily. So, well, let me finish this conversation with this. I want each of you to tell me what you love and embrace and enjoy about each other. You know, I mean, I really want to draw a circle around the human aspect of this relationship. Beyond what we believe, religiously or otherwise. You know, tell me why you love each other.
Well, Amanda is absolutely the strongest person mentally that I've and emotionally that I've ever met. Baby, I don't know if you want me to tell him this.
I'm cool with it.
Okay. She was diagnosed with Crohn's disease when she was 9 years old. And it's been a struggle for her to stay healthy for the last 20 years. And never have I ever heard her ask, you know, why is this happening to me? Why can't I be healthy? Why can't Crohn's disease go away? I've seen her cry out of pain, but never out of want of pity. Sorry. She's just the most incredible person I've ever met. She's the most loving person I've ever met. To other people, to animals. She posts these adoption posts on Facebook all the time, and it breaks my heart to see these animals in kennels. But she's just like, I know it hurts, but I just want to get the word out there so that we can help save lives. And that's just the person that she is. And
Amanda wants to rescue the world, huh?
She does. She's just awesome.
In my office, I'm the designated bug catcher because I put them outside.
Amanda, talk to me about your husband.
Robert's amazing. He just, from the second we met, he looks at me like there's nobody else. There, it's just the two of us when we're together. He's loving. He's giving. Probably he takes care of me, even when I'm being irrational and ask him to do things that I could easily do for myself. And he never is at a loss for words in telling me that he loves me and telling the world that he loves me. He is so passionate about so many of the things that he does, and that's really inspiring to me. He's just my perfect counterpart, and I really can't imagine being with anybody else. Like, he makes me laugh like nobody else can. Like, we break down in painful fits of laughter at least a couple times a week, and it's just, it, like, it's so cliche to say, but I'm just spending my life with my best friend and moving through the world like that.
And they say if you can be silly together or stupid together, you know, you got a good one. You're like,
oh yeah.
If you can be an idiot. Like, and
it's so funny. When I was on painkillers in the hospital, he was like filming me because I was being hilarious, and we would just laugh about the videos later. And he would even like play tricks on me because he knew I was subconscious. I will put it like that. But
oh, you know what though? Payback, Robert. One day.
I'm still waiting for it.
The tables may turn. Amanda, may I ask, how are you doing health-wise? You doing okay these days?
I am doing really well, actually. Actually cements my faith a bit. I had a surgery that ended up being a blessing in disguise. I lost my entire large intestine during a mistake during a surgery, but it put me in remission. And I've been in remission for 4 years ever since. So after 20 years of pain and suffering, I'm doing better than I ever have been.
Well, it's coffee, but I'm raising my glass to your good health. Okay,
thank you,
Amanda.
So much.
My glass of Java for you and your honor. You two are precious. Thanks for being on the radio and many years of happiness together, okay?
Thanks for having us.
Next up is my conversation with Dale McGowan, author of the book In Faith and in Doubt, How Religious Believers and Non-Believers Can Create Strong Marriages and Loving Families. Dale's got some personal experience with this subject. We'll talk to him in just a second. Hang on. Dale McGowan is an author, a speaker, a philanthropist. He is presently the managing editor of the Patheos Atheist Channel. He's written several books, including editing and co-authoring the book from 2007 called Parenting Beyond Belief and its companion called Raising Free Thinkers, A Practical Guide for Parenting Beyond Belief. He released the book in 2013, Atheism for Dummies, and in August of 2014, released the book that's going to serve as the anchor of the conversation I want to have today. That book's called In Faith and in Doubt, How Religious Believers and Non-Believers Can Create Strong Marriages and Loving Families. Dale McGowan, thanks for being here. How you doing?
Real good. Good to be here, Seth. Thanks.
So you wrote this book that says that interfaith couples are not necessarily doomed. Well, I mean, that's not really what you're saying, but I mean, that's what I think some people listening might be listening for. Tell me about the book itself.
Well, the book is called In Faith and in Doubt, and it is specifically about marriages and long-term relationships between religious and non-religious partners, which is something that had been missing from the literature before. There's a lot of interfaith literature out there, most of it saying that even that can't work. A lot of it is written by ministers and priests who are coming at it with a concern for their own denominations and the kind of loss of identity. But the fact is there's a different set of issues when you have a religious and a non-religious partnership. And in some ways it is more challenging, and in several ways it's actually less so. So the book just explores as many of the variables as possible. And I ran a survey of over 1,000 people in these relationships, and then also interviewed about a dozen couples in depth.
That's an angle that I hadn't really thought too much about. It's not just the biblical command to not yoke your life with an unbeliever, but the idea that if you do, it's going to water down the religious belief of one of them. It becomes then an issue of theological purity. That's an interesting angle.
Yeah, and identity for the next generation. So what they will frequently do, a minister or a rabbi or whatever, will say to a couple, go raise the children in the other faith. I don't care, but don't mix them. That's the thing that, so if everybody is in agreement that the one nasty outcome is an actual mixed marriage, then everybody will have these pure families that they can raise and sort of engender in the next generation the identity of that faith.
Dale, one of the patterns that I've been seeing is it just seems like in our conversations, one has to lean in more than the other. One has to give more than the other, right? There's one person that says, I'm going to church every Sunday, damn it, and you can come or stay, but I'm going. But if the other says, I'm going to the American Atheist National Convention, come with me, it doesn't seem to work in reverse.
Well, the degree to which that's the case really partially dictates what the outcome is going to be. If you have one person who's making all the effort to cross that gap, that's not good in any aspect of a marriage. You need to have people, you need to have the two willing to both bridge the difference. And that's my wife and I, for example, had that very much from the beginning. There was a recognition that we wanted it to work, that we loved each other very much and saw that there was no reason that this couldn't work if we both leaned in and both figured out what the things are that were important to us and what the things are that were negotiable. And recognize that we both had things that we would prefer, but that were negotiable if it was more important to the other person that we do something else. So it was a matter of both leaning in that helped to make it work really well.
What would you say to the person who says, it doesn't matter that much to me, I'm just fine? I mean, I had one person say, look, if I can't spare an hour a week to go hang out with my wife at church, we don't have much of a relationship. I mean, to them, it just doesn't make any difference. Do you think that can be healthy?
Oh, absolutely. I think if you say, this is not a hill to die on for me, you know, this is something that I am perfectly willing to do. I did it for years. I went to church with my wife for years and frequently got a lot out of it. Sometimes I didn't. Sometimes I was irritated and I would rant on the way home in the car. And it eventually got to be too much when the biblical reference you just made, 2 Corinthians 6:14. Do not be yoked with unbelievers. Do not be differently yoked with unbelievers. The minister of the church we were going to preached to that approvingly and said, it's right, it's true, that relationship cannot work. And this was a guy who was typically a very progressive, you know, intelligent minister, but he utterly lost me there. I was just furious. He was essentially saying to my wife, you know, you really shouldn't have done what you did in marrying this clown. So those are the things. But up to that point, I was entirely willing, exactly what you said. I'm willing to give the hour. It means a lot to her. And it really did. She loved to have me there, not for theological reasons, but to have that shared, quiet experience of sitting and listening and thinking together.
Well, what was her response when she heard her own pastor say, this was a bad idea, knowing how much she loves you?
She didn't like that one bit. But at the same time, she had this conflict because she really wanted me to keep going. Basically, what she wished is that he didn't go there. You know, that he just didn't hit that in the way that he did, that particular nail. But I just said, I don't feel like it's fair to you. I feel like I'm compromising your experience when I sit there and I'm aggravated and then all the way home I rant. So we eventually, I mean, it was eventually not a big deal, but it was not immediately easy. She felt the loss because I'm great to hang out with. You know, so I understand that. But it was one of those things that I was perfectly able to compromise on until I wasn't. And there were other things that I continued to compromise on. There were things that she gave on, and it was a really good balanced relationship all the way through. And she was a Southern Baptist. She identified as a Southern Baptist. So I'm not talking about a progressive Methodist or something.
I mean, my audience knows that I am married to a non-atheist. She has a God belief, and they've sort of followed our story over the years, and our life is good. We have a lot of love between us, but we also have difficulties. We have times when we clash and we don't get each other. We're operating on different frequencies. We've had those times of critical mass. A common element, I think, in these sort of interfaith or mixed belief relationships, huh?
Oh, it absolutely is. And I think it's common for any couple. Religion just introduces another set of variables. But the thing that we recognized from the beginning, I mean, the reason we got together in the first place and stayed together, is that our match in values was tremendous. We have always had essentially the same social and political opinions. She's always been very liberal socially. Basically, the telling moment of this is I showed her the Baptist Faith and Message, which is the big 5-page statement of all the things that Baptists believe. And I said, can we do an exercise? And could you show me which of these things you think are true and which things you don't support? And she went down and said, no, 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 no. Well, yes, and no, yes, no, no, no. 3/4 of the thing she did not support. She was Baptist by family identity, by family tradition. And it was an important family tradition. She had a grandfather and an uncle who were Baptist ministers. I mean, it was a very big deal in her family. Her mother is very serious believer. But that had to do with identity, and it had to do with beliefs, theological beliefs. In terms of values, we were a great match and always have been. Those are the things that matter on a daily basis. Whether she thinks Jesus is the Son of God is not something that actually gets in the way on a daily basis. But if she was going around the house thinking that gay people are sinners, that would bug me on a very different level. That'd be a very different thing for me to find it possible to work into a relationship.
Are those interchangeable? Let's say that you lined up immediately on the issue of God or no God, but you were night and day politically. Would it become the same kind of thing where, you know, you sort of live around that, or there's a value system beyond the R and the D or whatever your political parties are? I mean, is that applicable outside of religion and atheism?
No, typically they can't be reversed as easily. There was actually a really good piece of research about this very thing. Political differences and differences in social attitudes are much more difficult to overcome than differences in religious identity. So if you have a couple with significant, not just Democratic and Republican, because that could be moderate of each, but if you have somebody who has a significant divide in political and social issues, that is actually harder to rectify than having two different religious labels.
It sort of weaves itself more deeply into what you consider to be right and wrong.
Yeah, and that's why it's so important. I think it's really unhelpful the way we conflate values and beliefs. Beliefs are statements about what I think are true. about the world. You know, so if you believe in God or you don't believe in God, that's a statement of something that you think is a fact. Values are about what you think is good in the world. And having somebody with a really different sense of value and what is good and what is bad is much more difficult to overcome than a factual dispute, especially when it's on the abstract theological level.
So let's say there's a mixed belief couple, dating, engaged, whatever, preparing to share life together. How would you advise them, especially if they're operating on opposing sides of the wall?
Yeah, this is a lot of this came out pretty clearly from the survey that I did. What are the things that led to high conflict and tension? And what were the things that tended not to? The first one is, so we've got a married couple or a couple intending to get married, and they're already addressing it. There's the first great benefit, addressing it early and clearly saying, we have this difference, let's talk about it and recognize it in each other. That's crucial. If we have couples who don't address a difference, don't talk about it, in some cases don't even know about it until a couple of years into their marriage or 5 or 10 years in, or if one of them changes after they've been married for a while, that can be more difficult. That takes a little more work to get through. One of the main ones, one of the top indicators of tension is conversion. If you intend or even desire to convert your partner or deconvert your partner, that leads to tremendous conflict. You have to be willing to say, we have this difference and I accept this difference and I love you as you are. That doesn't mean you can't talk about your differences and argue over theological. Well, you can do all that stuff. But if you enter into it with an intention to change the person, I mean, it's never a good idea. Intending to change something as fundamental as religious belief or disbelief is a real deal killer for it. The other one is to focus on shared values rather than different beliefs, to be clear and intentional about working out agreements for all shared practices, church going, parenting, family, religious identity, defining the negotiables and non-negotiables, being very intentional about that. And then one of the other big ones is to learn about each other's worldview. If you just sort of leave each other in your bubbles and say, oh, he's over there with this crazy thing, and I've got my thing over here, and we don't really intersect with them, that's not as healthy. The religious person should learn about atheism, learn about humanism. What is it? What is it that's important to you? What do you think is true and not true? And the atheist should learn about and engage with the religious partner's worldview. When they do that, it changes the nature of, it's not a standoff anymore. It's actually an engagement with each other's worlds, just as if you had come from two different cultures. And then one of the big ones that I try to emphasize as well is take the opportunity to spread the word about your partner and your partner's worldview. You fell in love with a person who is Christian or who is Muslim or whatever it is, and learned that the stereotypes don't always apply. You know, that you can be a good and decent and worthy person and have this different worldview. Make this known. When you are in a group of atheists and you hear them bashing, making generalizations about Christians, that's an opportunity to sort of be an ambassador for the mix, you know, to go out and say, I have had a different experience. I know that some people are the way you're describing, but my wife or my husband is very different. That's a powerful voice.
Well, Dale, what do we do with the kids in all this? I mean, they're right there, smack dab in the middle of it, right?
Yeah. Oh, you can't have kids. No kids. Well, that's one of the things you've got to work out most clearly. You know, what's the intention for this? And the couples that have the best chance with this, the lowest amount of tension, are the ones who agree that the children are going to ultimately be able to choose their own path. So that does not mean that they can't go to church. It doesn't mean that they can't learn about the religion. It doesn't mean they can't go to the humanist group or whatever. They should do all those things in the same way that they would if they had a Christian and a Jewish parent. They should be able to engage in those two worlds, but the parents have to make it absolutely clear to each other and to the kids that this is something that's important to me. It's something that has identified me, but you have to make your own choice, and I will support you in that, and I will love you no less in that. Both parents have to agree that that's the approach, and then things tend to work out really great. Once in a while, you'll have both parents agree to raise the child religious, or in some cases, non-religious. I had some couples in the survey where there was one religious parent, but they really didn't feel the need for the kids to engage in that while they were kids. So they're all different versions of it. The important thing is that you come to an agreement about it and that you're on the same page about whatever the approach is, that you're not battling over the kids and pulling them one way or another.
Dale McGowan, author of the book In Faith and in Doubt, How Religious Believers and Non-Believers Can Create Strong Marriages and Loving Families. Your subtitle gives us hope. And I appreciate you sort of sharing your perspective. And I'm going to point everybody to the book and link that in the description box of this broadcast. Cool?
I appreciate that.
Well, thanks for your perspective and your great work. And we'll talk again very soon, okay?
Okay, great. Thanks. Thanks a lot, Seth.
And that is the show today. I'll see you back here next Tuesday as we talk about the illusion of God's presence. Again, a huge thanks to our show sponsor, The Great Courses Plus, offering right now to my listeners a free month of unlimited access to all of the lectures on their site. 30 days free when you sign up at thegreatcoursesplus.com/Seth Andrews. And I will see you here next week. Take care.
Follow The Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on The Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.